back to Thirst for Knowledge. This is episode 5. My name is Ricky. With me, I have.
Who do you have with you?
Who do you have? I'm John, and then it's Bill, and this is how that goes.
Well, I'm glad that we stuck to the same order we've been doing.
I don't remember what order we do, Ricky. I just show up.
All right, so we've got the results for Star City Games Legacy Open in Atlanta. First place was taken down by Blue Red Delver, then Teamer Delver, then Reanimator, and then Sneak and Show.
How do you pronounce that? Teamer?
Yeah, Teamer.
Is it Teamer?
I believe so.
I hate that.
The
can
names.
We just say Rog? Can we just say Rog, please?
We can.
Okay. Thanks.
Let's see. I mean, those new names are making it kind of hard to like keep things straight in your head.
Yeah, because Rog is kind of self-explanatory.
They got dumped on us so quickly.
No warning. No warning at all.
I don't know why they're doing like Teamer Delver, but then Blue Red is it Delver.
Yeah.
Like any consistency at all would be great, but I don't think we're gonna get that.
But then it's just a little too much, I think, if everything has a guild name or
maybe. And I mean it may just be Star City Games helping promote things, but
yeah.
Alright, so yeah, it looks like Blue is still running things for
Blue
the most
decks.
Part.
What do you know?
Yeah, I mean, see, this is what I don't understand, though. Everybody gets so upset, and you know, I'm a huge proponent of Pod. I love Pod. I've been playing Pod for well over 2 years. I absolutely love the deck. And people hate it, and I don't understand why, because when you look at Legacy, Delver is far more prevalent than Pod could ever possibly be. And I think, I don't know, I think a lot of it has to do with people just hate decks that don't have blue in them. Like, if a deck is doing really well and it doesn't have blue in there, people just, they hate it.
It must be cheesy.
Yeah, I mean, look at all the decks that have been banned out of Modern. Storm has blue in it, but I mean, that really needed to go. And then you have Jund.
That always takes a beating.
Yeah, Jund gets hated on constantly.
Bloodbraid, Deathrite.
I hated seeing Deathrite go.
It's a good card.
Alright. We have go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, this week we want to do something different, have a special Thanksgiving episode where, you know, we got together, sat around the table, and talked about our top 8 Magic cards that we believe have either done something great or just fun pet cards.
Absolutely. And in this, I want to do something that we kind of skipped out on. I want to tell the people a little bit about who we are as players and our experience with the game and how we got into Magic. So, John, do you want to start with yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I've been playing Magic for around 8 years now. I started when I was 14, and I honestly, I just saw it on the shelves and decided to pick it up one day, and one of my friends, from like middle school or what, middle school, used to play it or something when he was younger, and he taught me how to play. Slightly, and I just kept going from there, and then started going to a local shop, and yeah, it's just progressed since then. I guess the first set I bought packs of that was new was Planar Chaos. It came out like right when I started, so it was like around February.
That's an interesting set to start in.
Yeah, I started in that whole throwback block, which was kind of confusing, but not really, not as confusing as some people might think it would be. So the Time Spiral block is like one of my favorite blocks in Magic. So I don't know if I have any cards on this list. I do. I at least have one. Yeah, one.
So I have a question there.
Yeah.
Every Magic player seems like they have this one card that they saw at the very beginning of their Magic career that's just kind of stuck with them. Do you have one?
The one card that like I saw like right at the beginning.
Well, no, I mean, like, the kind of card that, like, hooked them into the game that they just loved. They opened it up and just...
My card was Visadrix.
if I'm talking about... Well, actually, I guess there's two different answers to that. If I'm talking about casual Magic, it was actually a revised Lord of the Pit that I found at, like, this really rinky-dink mom-and-pop card shop and just in some long boxes. That was the card I was like, wow, this card is... like badass, like that's the kind of cards I want to play with. It was definitely Lord of the Pit, which it's a terrible card, but at the time that was just like, this is the coolest card. It's full of flavor. It's f***ing big. and it flies, and it's awesome. I want to play with this card. So that was one of the big ones for me. And I think for the competitive side of Magic, I guess my card would be Teferi, Mage of Zalfir. So the first Pro Tour I ever watched was Time Spiral Lock Constructed. The big deck at that tournament, I think it was like Honolulu, was Blue Black Teferi Teachings Control. And that was just kind of like right up my alley. It's like just the kind of cards I like to play at the time. And yeah, so like that's kind of how I got into competitive Magic, was through seeing that card. And the first time I saw one, I bought it. I think it was like $7, and I was like, I want that card. But yeah, so can I get on to my top eight, or is there anything else you want to interview me about?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
All right, so top eight cards that I'm thankful for, I guess, since I started playing Magic.
What are you thankful for?
And most of these are from, all of them were like competitive Magic cards, except for, no, they're all have been competitive at one time, so take it as you will. My first card is Doran the Siege Tower.
Doran.
Yeah, I really love Doran the Siege Tower. So if you don't know what Doran the Siege Tower does, it is a rare creature from Lorwyn block. It's a 0/5. It costs black, white, and green. One of each of the Azban. And creatures with attack with their, do damage with their toughness instead of their power. So I was like, okay, this is the first kind of card I've seen like completely flip the game on its head, but you could build your deck around and make your deck like have creatures with better toughness, or just use it as a big ol' stompy dude, like that's really cheap. So Doran the Siege Tower was like one of the decks, one of the cards that went into a deck when I first started playing like Friday Night Magics, that I would just get stomped by, which was like Doran Junk, like back in the day, like with Bitter Blossoms and Orin Vipers and the whole, and Birds of Paradise, like all the fun stuff from that deck, like when Fairies was around. That was the deck that used to like stomp me down at Friday Magic.
That's a fun deck. Doran the Siege Tower is actually the reason why Nakata was banned in Modern.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they wanted Doran to be legal, or they wanted Doran to be a viable deck, and they thought that Wild Nakata would push it out of the format.
Huh.
Push Naya colors, I guess?
Maybe, because I guess that it's so efficient, you don't have any reason to explore outside of that.
Interesting.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so my top eight, my eighth pick, bringing in the rear, he's probably the best red planeswalker ever printed, Tybalt the Fiend-Blooded.
Oh god.
So I took a break from Magic and came back around, well, when Avacyn was coming out, and I just love this guy, even though he's pretty awful. Just seeing a two-costed planeswalker was pretty neat, and I was determined to make it work. Didn't really happen, but still got some playtime.
Oh, come on, tell them about the time you got that guy at FNM.
Oh my god, that one time at FNM. So I was playing a red Delver list with Reforge the Soul and Tybalt. So I miracle to Reforge the Soul, which is like a Will of Fortune. So we dump our hands and draw 7 cards. So Tybalt's minus 2 or 3 is you, sudden impact somebody, or you deal damage to them equal to the number of cards in their hand. So I got to hit them for 7. The Tybalt. So, I was living the dream.
The look on that guy's face was awesome, though.
It was pretty awesome. There's people sitting, like, watching the game, and we're just like, how did that happen?
Yeah, the judge absolutely lost it.
Yeah. He's like, that's ridiculous. But that was my jank tank, brew. But yeah, that was my 8th pick, so. He doesn't really get much love nowadays, but, well, ever, but I tried. What about you, Ricky?
My first pick is going to be an easy out. That's going to be Glittering Wish.
Glittering Wish?
Probably just because that's my most successful speculation target ever. that card did me well.
But why do you like the card? Why are you thankful for that card, Ricky? What has it done for Magic or for you personally? Other than making you money.
Yeah, it made me a lot of money. me and the Ferret were actually talking about Glittering Wish about 1.5-2 years ago, and just talking about how Modern being a multicolored focused format, Glittering Wish has to eventually find a home. And like, cards that are that powerful, like, they will eventually find somewhere to go. So it just kind of, I don't know. That's what I always like to look at. I really like looking at cards that have really high power levels and just no place to stay right now. And I mean, it's completely possible that they never find a home. If Wizards had been more careful, they would not have made Jeskai Ascension that way. And Glittering Wish would still be homeless.
Homeless?
Yeah, a homeless wish.
Aww.
But yeah, so that's what it represents to me. It just represents, you know, that brew, I guess.
Gotcha.
Okay, go ahead, John.
All right, so my second pick is Master of Waves. Master of Waves. So here's why I like Master of Waves. Master of Waves is like a nod to the, like, Legacy and Modern players. And like, oh, well, maybe this deck, like, they made it a Merfolk for a reason. It was kind of like giving you a hint, like, this might work there. And I kind of like when Magic does, like, very subtle things in design like that, where they just kind of give the nudge. But they also make it playable in the set that it comes out in. That's why I like Master of Waves. Kind of a point to old decks and formats that might not be the most powerful, but like, hey, what if we did something like this? Obviously, Legacy isn't going to be affected as much as something like Modern, but it makes decks that were somewhat viable more viable, if that makes sense.
It does.
You know, I've always wondered, because you know this has to be the case, how long in R&D were those elemental creatures merfolk?
Oh, I think probably like 3 days max.
Probably some guy mentioned it and they smacked him and fired him.
Yeah.
But I like Master of Waves too. I didn't even think about that, and I'm a merfolk player, so I don't know what I was thinking. Good card. My next card, number 7 for me would be, I think I want to say Pack Rat, because nobody really appreciated that card except in Limited at first, and even then people weren't like, well, obviously it's a Limited bomb. It was just disgusting. If you had a Pack Rat in your pool, you'd probably just win if you could draw into it, but it took a while to pick up speed and Standard in a Mono Black Devotion list, but after it did, I mean, that card was just kind of everywhere.
Yes, that card took off very quickly.
But I think it just was a good card and good design overall for a card. I don't think it was too broken or anything. It's just interesting card that kind of took off and warped the format a bit. So I think it gets my thanks. Thanks for Mono Black Devotion, Pack Rat.
You know what I like about Pack Rat, though? Pack Rat is one of those cards that for limited players, whether that's draft or a sealed deck, it's a skill tester. Because if you don't really know what that card could possibly do, if you don't think about like how out of hand that card can get, and you don't know that the token still can make
tokens.
Pack Rats,
yeah.
You might not play that card in your sealed deck, or you might not draft that card. Because it just looks like, it's like, what, a 2-2 for a 2?
It's Star Store.
But like, base is a 2-2, right?
Yeah. No, I can't remember Pack Rat now.
Let's take a look. It is a Star.
Yeah. I was going to say, Star for 2.
Yeah.
Power and toughness is equal to the number of Pack Rats. Or the
number of rats.
Oh, okay.
Rats, I'm sorry.
Number of rats.
Yes, yeah. Because then you can play Mew Vault, and it got bigger.
Technically, it could be a 1-1 when you played it, right? It's most of the time going to be a 1-1?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, if you don't really think about a card like that, you could easily not play that card.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot that made that card... Or there was a lot that had to happen to make that card really good in Standard. Because you had the Devotion mechanics coming out, and its tokens having a CMC of 1 and a black was really important for that. But then also, like you said, Willie, Mutavault just push that card over the edge.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you'd swing in, and then for 2 mana, you could give everything +1/+1 at instant speed.
Yeah.
And it was just brutal.
But also, it just played well in Mono Black Devotion, because that was just a game where you're, like, grinding it out, 1-for-1-ing your opponent, and drawing cards off, like, Underworld Connections. And so, once you've killed all their creatures, or you've whittled them down, everything you draw turns into a creature for yourself. So, I mean, you just... everything's gas for you. A land, you top deck a land, it's now Pack Rat, so.
Yeah, and the removal was pretty awful about them.
It's just like Heroes Downfall.
Yeah.
Doomblade.
So I mean, yeah, like your best answer, comes at 3 CMC. So if you know, if you're on the draw and you've got that card sitting in your hand, it looks kind of crappy against a turn 2 pack rat.
All right, Ricky, go ahead.
All right,
go for your number 7.
My number 7 card is probably going to be Reclamation Sage.
Oh. Good pod target.
That's a fantastic pod target. Slotted right into the deck the second they printed it. And it was kind of just a nod from Wizards, or at least in my opinion, it was a nod from Wizards, that they were looking at some of the Eternal formats and kind of filling in slots.
How so?
It was a very awkward slot that was being filled by Harmonic Sliver.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of slotted right in there, and they gave it the elf. They gave the elf tribal
type. Make it
look
more relevant.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yep.
All right. I guess we can move on to number 6, John.
All right. So my number 6 is Pyromancer's Ascension.
Pyromancer's Ascension? Fun.
Yeah. So yeah, super fun card to play with. When that card was in standard, I always wanted that card to be good. And I know like one of the players that, when the card came out in Zendikar, one of the players in my area that was really good, try to do some stuff with it in Cruel Ultimatum. It just wasn't quite good enough.
Was that Ricky?
It wasn't Ricky. It was not Ricky. I don't know. He might have done that, but I don't know.
Oh, God.
But eventually it became like an infinite turns, like weird combo deck. And I played that a ton. And it was one of the best times of my life, like in Magic for sure. It was so fun to just, cause I just went on a tear and like it was week after week after week of me just winning with Pyromancer's Ascension. And that was one of the first decks that like I played that like really rewarded skill, but also rewarded you being really damn lucky. And I really like that deck. It was a really rewarding deck to play. So Pyromancer's Ascension.
There's a, one of the guys in my casual group plays a variant of that deck where he infinitely time walks.
Yeah.
And that thing is,
sounds like a fun kid.
Yeah, my casual group's kind of spiky. It's like Jank and Spike all mixed together. It's weird.
Sounds like EDH.
Yeah, it's like 60 card EDH.
It's like, oh, you want to pull out the decks that do dumb stuff now? Okay, let's do that.
Yeah. Go ahead. Alright,
so, number 6 for me would, be Terminus.
Wow.
I think just the Miracle cards in general, I guess Terminus and Treat the Angels, I mean, obviously it spawned its own archetype and legacy, and I really like obviously the cards are super annoying, like, and limited, and treating and bonfiring and limited was kind of put you on tilt, but I think overall it's a pretty fun deck to play, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, all of the Miracle cards, those things, they just created such a tension on the draw. Sometimes it was nerve-wracking, man.
For sure.
I just don't want to talk about Miracles going on.
Okay, we'll move on.
I think eventually we might have to go over that deck. Just saying.
I just don't ever want to talk
about... Maybe we get Philip Braverman to get on here and talk to us about Miracles.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
All right. So, my number 6, I have to go with Doubling Season.
Oh, gosh.
That card just lets you do so many broken things. It just encompasses everything I want to do in a format like EDH. Alright, John, you want to go on with number 5?
Yeah, sure. So, my number 5 was Mox Opal.
Wow, okay.
Alright, so Mox Opal is one of those cards that kind of like brought up the idea to me in that whole set of them like throwing back to sets.
Yeah.
That was one of my first experiences with stuff like that. So I thought that was a really cool idea. I think now it's becoming like Pokemon, where they're just like every little while they just like give a nod to the guys who's been playing for a while, like, oh, we're gonna go back to Mirrodin, oh, we're gonna go back to Ravnica. And let's be honest, Karns of Tarkir is kind of a nod to Betrayers, let's be real.
What?
It's like the way they should have done Betrayers of Kamigawa.
I don't know. I see a lot of like nods to, I mean, tons
and of Shards of Alara.
And like Onslaught.
Oh, Onslaught, just because the fetch lands are there.
And Morph.
Okay. I could see that. Morph gets it for me.
Get there.
But it's just like, it would like, but it's like throwing nods to like different things, you know? And I don't know, I'm kind of over that. I kind of wish we would just go somewhere completely different and like have like completely different stuff, because I don't feel like Magic's done that in a while. Like somewhere like Innistrad was really cool because it was so different, you know?
Yeah.
And I like when they shake things up like that with set design. But anyway, I was talking about Mox Opal. Mox Opal was a card that I really liked to play back in the day in Big, I think it was called Big Red. And I won like a game day or something. I can't remember. I won a From the Vault Legends in a tournament. Or From the Vault, one of the From the Vaults. I won one of the From the Vaults in a Magic tournament. Where I played Big Red. It was called Big Red. It was like a standard deck with a bunch of artifacts, and Mox Opal was in there. And it's also one of the only foil mythics I've ever opened in my life. So
nice.
That was really awesome.
All great. Awesome.
Was that awesome?
That was number five?
Yeah. That was number, yeah. Like
all right, so my five. Number five is going to have to be Batter Skull.
Oh.
That card is just kind of... It got Stoneforge Mystic banned in Modern, and it's just, you know, I really love that and Stoneforge Mystic paired together. There's nothing better than slapping down an old 4/4 lifelink with Vigilance Germ. And I think it shows just how far they can push equipment, but not make it completely broken, and it's just a fun card.
I don't know if this is on the... I don't know if this is on the safe side or not broken. Batter Skull. Oh, God.
I don't think Batter Skull is the problem. I just think Batter Skull is real good.
Stoneforge and Batter Skull might be broken, but...
That is two together.
It coming into play with that germ token, though, and having the safety of being able to bounce is just brutal.
Yeah, but I think that's why I'm thankful for it.
It was, like, a really cool way to use Living Weapon.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm really happy they made that card. Even if it's
because
even
by if itself,
it's real good.
By itself, it's a 4/4 lifelink vigilance creature with for 5. So, I mean, that's, like, pretty well costed itself. And then you can bounce it. And I mean, and
or let somebody carry it, which is ridiculous.
No, yeah, it's an aggressive design. But I mean, like, if that card didn't exist, the swords would be everywhere, and you might actually have to think about which.
Yeah. Well, you would just get Jitte or something.
That's fair.
All right. Ricky, what do you got sitting at five?
My number five is Edric, Spymaster of Trest. Edric is a 2/2 elf rogue that whenever a creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, its controller may draw a card. So it was designed for Commander as like a deterrent for people swinging at you, but in one-on-one, it basically gives all your creatures curiosity. And I had a lot of fun with this card. I may have at some point in time thrown some tropical islands in my deck, in my Merfolk deck, to splash for him. And I actually got to do that one time where I like swung in with like 5 guys and Aether Vialed Edric in, but it kind of made the deck a little too inconsistent, so he ended up coming out. But I absolutely love the card. I love things that let me draw.
Yeah, he came out in the Commander set, and he was definitely needed to be in the Commander set. And he's great in Commander, and he's also, he has, like, applications for use in Legacy, yeah.
Yeah. On a side note, he's actually banned in French Commander.
The 1v1?
Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, you just have a deck full of, like, low-cost flyers or evasion creatures, and you just swing all in and draw a bunch of cards and win.
Yeah, fair.
All right, number four.
All right, my number four is Scalding Tarn. So Scalding Tarn is of the
Scalding Tarn, the Mind Sculptor.
Scalding Tarn, yeah, yeah. That's pretty much it right there. But anyways, Scalding Tarn is my favorite.
Is it?
It's my favorite because it's blue and red.
Get it? Is it?
And it's yeah.
Wow.
yeah, because blue and red. Blue and red are two of my favorite colors. And Scalding Tarn was kind of one of those cards where like, hey, you remember those things that you really wanted back in the, like, since, like, we made these other cards? Well, here's those cards. And ever since then, they're like, you know how you've been complaining about not having the other fetch lands? Here's the other fetch lands. And it was just kind of like a way of people, a way I think that the R&D kind of listened to what the fans wanted and kind of rewarded them. And what was eventually like one of my favorite sets ever, which is Zendikar.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Scalding Tarn.
Well, mine, continuing on with things that can carry a Batterskull and being a Merfolk, I'd have to say True Name Nemesis is my number four. That card is Mini Progenitus and is a Merfolk, and I love playing Merfolk, so it fits perfectly in there for me. How do you guys feel about True Name Nemesis?
Giving Progenitus the ability to carry a stick is not something that probably should have been done.
That card's a hammer, yo. It's like, when you saw that card, if you play competitive Magic, you're like, oh, that card's good. That's a real good card.
I think it's down to like $18, but at one point in time, that thing was like $50.
Yeah. That's a good Magic card.
That's a real good Magic card.
Alright. So my next is Wall of Blossoms / Wall of Omens.
Okay.
And basically any deck that I can run them in my casual decks, they end up getting slotted in just because they allow me to build up defenses and let me kind of dirtle around while I do something stupid, like mill my opponents out with like a Phoenix and Eater of the Dead.
Awesome, Ricky. I don't know what any of those cards do.
Phoenix is one of the new gods that you can...
Oh, Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix.
Yeah, got you. Know him. Yep.
Eater of the Dead.
Got it.
Do you know what that one is?
Yep.
No, you don't. So for zero mana, you can exile a creature from the graveyard and untap them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So long as you keep like hitting creatures from your opponent's deck, you can like basically just infinitely mill people out.
Oh, cool deck.
It's an awful deck. It's a lot of fun though. Alright, anyways. So, Willie?
Number three, John.
My number three is Genesis Wave.
Ah.
And, Will, you're definitely allowed to tell the story about this card if you want.
Wait, which one? When I beat you at game day?
It might have been that one.
Well, it kind of pairs up with my next card, so.
Oh, really? Okay, well, we'll just wait until that happens. But Genesis Wave, if you don't know what it does, there's too much text for me to really remember right now, so go look at it. But basically you pay X and then you flip X cards off the top of your deck and like all permanents, I think it is, mm-hmm. with converted mana cost X or less, you get to put into play for free. So there used to be a combo deck in Standard, that was elves. It was like an elf combo deck, which I was already all about because elf combo has been one of my favorite decks for like ever since I ever saw it. So I was really into this deck and I played it a ton and I was really good at playing it, but
not good enough
apparently. So, even though I still feel like I got robbed, in that tournament, but I'll let William talk about his next card.
So my next card, number three, coming in hot, Snapcaster Mage. Snapcaster Mage and his boys. I mean, when I came back to Magic, I put together a blue-red Delver deck because I didn't want to play blue-white because I didn't want to invest in... That deck was super expensive at the time. So I was playing blue-red Delver with Snapcaster Mages and lots of fun burn spells. But at M13 game day, I was playing a blue-red Delver deck and ended up beating John in the finals, or knocking him in semifinals, knocking him out with my... homebrew blue red Delver list. John was not too happy. He beat me earlier in the day, but after the cut, I got him the second time.
Okay, so here's the thing. I was 4-0 in an 8-man tournament.
It was an eight-man game day.
It was an eight-man game day. And
we played. That wasn't our best tournament.
Was that the Toy Factory?
Oh, yeah, it was at the Toy Factory.
Shout out.
Hillsboro, North Carolina. Go check them out. But, yeah, I smashed everybody. I was 4-0. And after four rounds, like, oh.
We're going to cut to top eight. No,
we're going to cut to top four. And then we cut to a top four. And then for no reason, I get paired up against William because I was smashing everybody. And William had the best deck in the room against mine.
So pretty much it was like me arc trailing, 2-for-1-ing all day his little elf dorks.
And then snapping back and doing that more. And then he boarded in slag storms. And
GG.
It just wasn't very fun after that.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. I think I remember that.
You probably heard about it.
Yeah, I think I remember Willie telling me about that. Anyways.
Number three, Ricky.
We're starting to get into the good ones now.
Yeah.
Has to be Restoration Angel.
I was going to say, after you said Wall of Emmons, I was like, you're going to say Restoration Angel.
It doesn't so much have anything to do with Restoration Angel and Wall of Emmons.
Thragtusk.
Yes.
Everything.
Thragtusk. And Blaze
Other
Blazer.
Ones. Yeah. And probably your top one. I know what your top one is.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to ruin the surprise.
We'll see. All right, so, John, you're number two.
All right.
Well, can we talk about Restoration Angel and how disgusting that card is?
Yes.
Yeah, let's talk about Restoration.
Just not only just Thragtusk, it's just a 3-4 for 4 with Flash when flying. It's just a good card.
Yes.
And then it just gives you value on so many other creatures.
Yes. And that's one of those cards that, like, will, like, let you play with your opponent a little bit, like give them a little mind game, like let them be like, ah, oh, I got you, and you'd be like, no.
You know, set four lands to the side and pull off your Restoration Angel and make them hold back an attack.
It's true.
It's pretty scary, like trying to swing into an opponent, you're not sure if they have that or not. The four toughness is, oof.
Not only just the four toughness, it resets another blocker, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it resets another guy, so, like, they could be swinging in sideways with a guy you totally couldn't get blocked by, and then you just get blown out by a Restoration Angel if you don't see it.
Hey, guys, can we take 5 minutes?
Are you playing WoW?
No. Where are we at?
We're about to go over
number two.
Yeah, I think you have to do your number three, right?
I did Snapcaster.
Oh, that's okay. That's fine. I forgive you.
My number two is Tombstalker.
Tombstalker?
Tombstalker. So, Tombstalker is a really, there's a really interesting story behind this card. Okay, so my first pre-release I ever went to was Future Sight. And the first card I ever opened was Tombstalker. So, out of a Future Sight pack, I went to the dealer room and spent this is back when you could, like, sell product and then they could resell it the same day. So I bought a pack for, like, $5 just to see what it was. And to see what was in it and looking at the new cards because I didn't look at spoilers then. I'm like, whoa, some of these cards are weird. And then I looked at the last card, my rare, and it was weird. But then I saw it costed, like, $8. And then, my friends wanted to look at my pack just to look at the cards, too. So they looked at them like, whoa, this card's really good. And I'm like, it is? And then I read it, and it was really good. So, Tombstalker was a really cool card to open. My first card from a set at my first pre-release where I hadn't seen any of the cards. I went in completely blind.
Mm-hmm.
But also at that same tournament was the first time I ever had a short ban for Magic and the only time. I actually got banned for 6 months at the Future Sight pre-release because, me and my friends wanted to get our cards, get our packs, and then drop from the tournament. And then we proceeded, and they wouldn't let us do that for some reason. And we had been waiting, like, all day, and we had drove a long ways to go to this tournament. And we just kind of wanted to go home and draft all those cards. So, with all those packs, and they're like, you know, they wouldn't let us do that. So we cursed them out, and I ended up getting banned.
You got banned at a pre-release?
At my first release, me and my friends all got banned, and we all pinned our DCI cards to a wall of the store, and it was kind of like a little memorial of that time we all got banned at a Magic tournament.
Nice. Awesome. Delve's a pretty good mechanic.
It's pretty good.
Something like Treasure Cruise has it, I think. I heard that card has it.
Yeah.
All right, well, my number two pick would have to be Lightning Bolt. It's kind of, probably, it is, I think it's the best removal spell in Magic.
I think you're just like building a Delver deck in our little list here.
Told you. Might be a little biased. But Lightning Bolt, you know, in Modern, the creature has to pass the Lightning Bolt test.
Yes, it does.
And that is just pretty self-explanatory, Lightning Bolt, but that's my number two pick.
Okay.
Yeah, Lightning Bolt's a really cool card to me, too, because when I first started playing, my local shop owner was like, okay, you know nothing about Magic, obviously. You're playing red, and you're not
burned up.
You're not playing, yeah, here, buy four Lightning Bolts. They're like 50 cents a piece. And I'm like, okay. So that was a really cool card for me when I first started.
Just so good.
All right, so, yeah, my number two pick is Primeval Titan.
I knew it. I thought it was going to be number one.
Nope. Primeval Titan's number two. It is the card that, like, so I started playing Magic a long time ago, but I wasn't really aware of competitive Magic for a very long time. So when I came back into Magic, I decided to build Wolfern Ramp and absolutely just fell in love with that deck. And Primeval Titan has just allowed me to do absolutely tremendously broken things.
You want to give an example?
It is everything I want to do in a Magic card. So the Wolfern Ramp, I was telling John about this earlier. It kind of split into two different decks for me. So I took the deck to a GPT, and it allowed me to top 8 the GPT. It was Slayer Stronghold with a Cloud Shift. And I just managed to, like, drop a Titan and Cloud Shift it out and ramp my mana and keep ramping. And it just, ugh.
Cloud Shift. You always were trying to play Cloud Shift, and I was like, that's a stretch, Ricky.
Oh, that card let me do such broken things.
Like, it's just dead without a Titan.
I mean, a lot of cards are very dead.
That card's super dead.
Maybe. But I mean, like, so, for instance, what I was telling John earlier, at that GPT, there was a turn at which my opponent was sitting at, like, 16 health, and he swung in with Thrun. I couldn't block, so I took my 4. He figured there's no way I can take him out at this point. So I have Slayer Stronghold in my hand, Inferno Titan, and Cloud Shift. Drop the Inferno Titan, dealt 3 damage to my opponent, gave it haste.
With
swung,
a Slayer Stronghold.
Yes. Swung, dealt another 3 to my opponent, hit him for 8, Cloud Shifted, and then hit him for another 3. Oh, God, it was so beautiful.
Hashtag wrecked.
It was everything I love about Magic. You don't get that feeling often enough in Magic.
Sure. You had a lot of mana, I guess.
Yeah, Primeval Titan allowed you to do really stupid things. I mean, there was a turn earlier in the game. I hit Primeval Titan on turn 4, went up to 6. I mean, so I guess you could say I was winning the game as it was already. But I mean, I don't know.
That's still a cool play.
Good.
There we go. All right, number one pick, John. What is it?
Okay, so my number one pick of cards I am thankful for in Magic is not a card.
Oh, gosh.
What a twist.
Plot twist.
It is the M10 rules changes.
Oh, okay.
So the M10 rule changes basically took away mana burn. So it used to have, when you would have to empty your mana pool at any time, you would take that much damage, however much extra mana you had in. And it also took damage off from using the stack. So it used to be you could take cards like Mog Fanatic is a perfect example. Like, so they have a 2/2, you have a Mog Fanatic. Okay, so Mog Fanatic is a 1/1 for 1, and you can sacrifice it to do 1 damage to target creature. So they would attack with their 2/2, probably not because people knew how this worked, but they would attack with their 2/2. You can block with your Mog Fanatic, put damage on the stack, so the damage used the stack, so it went on the stack, and then above, and then you would sacrifice your Mog Fanatic, put its trigger on the stack, so then Mog Fanatic would do 1, and the damage the Mog Fanatic would do would still be on the stack, and it would resolve. And then that 2/2 would then die from having 2 damage on it. But you could do a whole bunch of other tricks like that where you, or stuff like Cloud Shift, like Ricky was just talking about. If that card was around then, there was cards like it. But if that card was around, you could block with a creature and then Cloud Shift that creature, well, after you put damage on the stack, and that creature would still do damage. And so there's a bunch of like tricky stuff you could do with that, but really in competitive Magic, I think that people who didn't go into Friday Night Magic or something knowing about damage on the stack just feel like they got completely blown out.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun for people who didn't understand that damage worked like that. So I think it was, and it completely opened up new card design when they took damage off of the stack. So I think the M10's rule changes kind of changed the way that I played Magic and that everybody had to play Magic. And it shifted enough that I kind of got more interested in the Magic. Like, oh, okay, there's a different way to play it now.
Absolutely. I agree completely. Well, boys and girls.
Let's hear it.
My number one pick, number one Magic card that I'm thankful for would have to be Island.
Oh, cop out.
Without you, Island, I cannot be able to play. I would not be able to play Magic.
Grown.
How else would I play my Delver of Secrets, my Brainstorms? I don't need you to play my Force of Wills, but it helps if you're there. I mean, what else is there to say? True Name, Nemesis, Snapcaster Mage, Delver of Secrets, Brainstorm, Treasure Cruise. Thank you, Island.
That's awful.
You're welcome.
But let's all give like a big high five to Island for being way better than every other basic man.
Alright, it's my turn.
I guess. What are you gonna say, Forrest?
No.
No. I know what it is.
What's that?
I'm guessing Ricky's. Ricky's, Rampant Growth.
Nope.
Damn. Let's guess it, John. What did Ricky think before? Corpse Jack Menace.
Ricky is thankful for,
Birds of Paradise.
I'll give you a hint, it's not green.
Pod. It's Birthing Pod.
Birthing Pod?
Nope, it's not Birthing Pod.
It's not Corp. Yeah, go ahead. I'm lost.
Yeah, go for it.
My number one favorite card, the card that led me down into the deck that I'm currently playing in Commander and also got me really into Cube, is Opposition.
Opposition?
Okay. Yep.
So 2, blue, tap an untapped creature control, tap target artifact, creature, or land. This card, the first time I played it, I absolutely fell in love with it.
Man, that's I agree.
Opposition. It is so much fun.
Awesome card.
Yeah.
I've never played with that card, but, like, I've seen people have that card, and what is it, Thalia Knight Hermit? Or Deranged Hermit.
Ooh.
Oh, man, that card is pretty dumb with Deranged Hermit.
Yeah. The reason it's in my Commander deck is because of another card. Yay, I get to show my dirtiness. Actually, the deck's not actually that dirty, it's actually kind of spiky. So, sorry, here we go. So the card that it pairs with really well my deck is a 7-mana enchantment, Dismiss into Dream. So each creature your opponent controls is an illusion in addition to its other types, and has when this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability, sacrifice it.
Okay.
So yeah, I'll do things like I'll get these two enchantments out, and then do things like throw in Pester Mite, kill one of your creatures, tap the Pester Mite, tap that other one down, but it dies since it's an illusion. So yeah, it's a pretty hard lock in a game once it gets going.
That's pretty gross.
Yeah. Secretly, I'm a spike, even though I don't like to admit it.
Secretly?
I don't like people actually playing the game against me, for the most part.
No, I feel that. I would much rather just do my thing while they watch.
You do you.
But I'm going to do me, and you're going to watch. Gonna
All right. Speaking of Deranged Hermit, I think we need to do our segment of who wins in a drinking contest.
Well, hang on one second. We forgot something, though.
Oh, gracious.
Well, no, John kind of went over it a little bit, but Willie, do you want to kind of
give an introduction? Oh, we need to give our backgrounds. Yeah, I forgot.
Do you want to give an introduction to who you are?
Well, I started playing Magic in late 2001. It was Odyssey coming out. I was playing. Well, maybe it was 2002. Odyssey might have been out and Torment and Judgment were coming out. I remember playing a lot during the end of that block and beginning of Onslaught, Legion, Scourge is when I was really playing when I was younger. Played their Mirrored In. When Champions of Kamigawa came out, I kind of slowed down playing, was still picking up stuff and checking it out, and I would play in random pre-releases and whatnot in limited events, but I wasn't really playing competitively until I came back and Avacyn Restored, and then I started playing again. Really enjoyed playing random decks. I didn't never really picked up an archetype or a certain type of deck until recently when I discovered Delver of Secrets and Merfolk.
Okay.
Any questions?
Like earlier, we were talking with John, and he had like that one card that kind of like hooked him into the game. Did you have one like that for you?
When I first started playing, let me try to think. I really liked the Onslaught block. They had those like gladiator creatures, you know, like Silvos, Rogue Elemental, and Leonin or whatever, the cat guy with the big shield.
Mm-hmm.
Those cards I really, really liked. Like, I just had, like, green and white decks and with those guys and dragons, big dragons, Bladewing the Risen, stuff like that. And then Slivers. I had a Slivers deck that was really fun to play.
Don't you still have that deck?
No. I still have my foil Sliver Overlord I pulled back then, though.
God, that thing's got to be worth a fortune right now.
No, it's not.
Really?
because of the premium deck series, Sliver. Even though it's old border. Even though mine's old border.
Huh.
Which is best border. And unfortunately, I was playing during that time and didn't understand the value of fetch lands, so I probably just threw all of those lands in with my bulk cards, and I lost them.
That hurts.
Yeah, it does. They're reprinted now, so it doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah. So I've been playing for a very long time. Started playing back in elementary school.
Back in 83, Ricky was slinging.
Back in 83?
83.
I was in on that. I was way in on the beta testing.
Yes, you were.
No, but I started playing forever ago, literally. Almost at the beginning of Magic. I remember I was a kid. I remember walking into Babbage's one time, and they had Ice Age booster packs and Revised booster packs sitting next to each other, and I would snub my nose at the Revised booster packs every time. Because the Revised booster packs were so ugly, they had that horrible, like that weird two brown colors.
Yeah.
And then the Ice Age packs were like blue and bright and had like that.
And had awesome cards in them.
Yeah, like the Jester's Cap was on there. Like this dude with like a clown face staring at you.
That's what a Jester is.
Yeah. So.
So what was your card? Jester's Cap.
No, my card was, the first card I really got excited about was one of my first ones I ever opened up. It was Keldon Warlord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what he does?
Nah.
So Keldon Warlord is two red-red, and Keldon Warlord has power and toughness, each equal to the number of non-wall creatures you control. It's just a fun card.
Yeah, while we're looking at this card, so if everybody pulls that card up, you can see Keldon Warlord has a huge sword.
Yes.
He's got a horse too. So who do we think would win a drinking contest? Keldon Warlord's horse or Ricky?
Well, his horse?
His horse.
That seems odd.
His horse. You obviously couldn't beat him.
That's true.
His horse. Can't see the horse's eyes though, so it's covered by his massive sword.
I love the art though. There's just like that building burning in the background.
He did that with his sword and his reindeer antlers.
I think Keldon Warlord's horse would definitely win.
You think so?
I think you underestimate how much a horse can actually drink, sir.
Yeah,
that's true. What if he has a serious allergy to alcohol, though?
Well, then it would be an even playing field, because so does Rick, you know?
That's true. Fair enough. So can we just, let's just say he has a severe allergic or a severe allergy to alcohol, and Ricky and him actually tie. So, Ricky, you tie the horse.
I tied a 1,200-pound animal. I think I get, like, the bonus points for weight advantage.
You lost. We didn't know how big the horse was, so
now I mean, that's a pretty muscly orc-looking dude right there. So
yeah, he could be like 2 feet.
Oh, he could. You know,
it's all about scale. We don't have any birds for scale, so
we don't have any birds for scale, guys. Okay,
that sword could be like a letter opener.
I think that means the horse is pretty small too.
Yeah, so you could beat it then, but
pygmy horses.
So results are inconclusive.
Results are inconclusive. This is fucking beat a horse.
No contest. No contest.
Sorry, Ricky. We'll have to try again next week.
That is a weird segment. We actually need to do the other segment though. Holly Does Magic. That sounds like the most fun ever.
We'll have to do it some week. She's up to it.
Okay, so any shout-outs for you two?
Shout-out to Tybalt, you know, hanging in there.
Anything, Angel?
I'm going to shout-out Justin Timberlake.
He has that new tequila.
He's got tequila. He owns, like, some part of MySpace.
What?
I'm down with it. Yeah, he, like, bought, a very large share of MySpace.
That seems like a poor life decision.
Well, I mean, he's got enough money to have a little bit of fun. So, why not try to bring back dead social media?
Bring it back. He's bringing MySpace back. Yep.
I mean, there's there's some cool people that have, you know, shares of MySpace now. Pharrell Williams, you know, reach out to him, too.
Shout out.
Shout out, bro. So, you never know.
So, hold on. Is MySpace actually traded stock?
No.
No.
Okay. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Shout out to iPhone 6 Plus. Too big to fit in my pocket.
Gotta stop wearing them skinny jeans.
Carry it around in my fanny pack.
Oh, nice, bro. Yep. Ricky, who are you shouting out right now?
I'll shout out Puka Trade. Shit's getting sweet.
Puka Trade. Shit's getting sweet, Puka Trade. That should be your new tagline. Puka Trade. Shit's getting sweet.
I'm having a lot of fun using the service. And like I said, I've gotten 2 dual lands in the past 2 months, so I'm kind of stoked on this.
Hashtag shit's getting sweet.
Hashtag shit's getting sweet. Yeah. Okay. And to the listeners, though, I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. It was a little bit of a tangent, but we did think that it was important for you guys to get to know a little bit more about us and see where we're coming from as players. We do still have our listener rewards program going on. Once we hit 100 listeners, we will be sending out a Soren Solemn Visitor in the mail. So retweet and follow the tweets for this episode going out. And, yes.
Do that.
Do that. Alright, so, okay. Anything else, you guys?
Not that I can think of.
Well, this has been episode 5. Thank you guys for coming out.
Thanks.
Okay, so yeah, what are you guys doing for the holidays?
I'm not really sure.
You guys coming down?
Should be, definitely.
Yeah, I'm coming down. 2 weeks.
Rick, are you there? Whoa. John, unplug your mic and plug it back in. That is like crazy. Ricky, you back? Alrighty.
Okay, I'm back.
Alright. Do you hear John?
What was that?
That's John's mic. He sounds like a chipmunk.
I think John should probably reconnect his call, because that's probably not usable audio.
Oh, gracious.
Am I a chipmunk?